Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 45 of Nerd Pride Radio. 45, the most famous issue of the North Britain newspaper. More on that later. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like Karen Gillan's wig. That's right, Karen Gillan, Amy Pond from Doctor Who. She shaved her head to be the villain Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, she's gorgeous, she's Scottish, she's nerdy, fits right in here. And the reason I used her wig is because she had to shave her head to be Nebula, and she actually kept all the hair and had it made into a wig of her own hair so that she has something to wear until everything grows back. And someone asked her in an interview and said, so are you going to donate that to Locks of Love? And she said, well, that was originally my plan. I mean, I'm using it now, but I was going to donate it all afterwards and then realized that, you know, maybe could just sell it at an auction, make a lot of money from some dirty pervert on the internet, and then you can use that money to buy lots of wigs for Lots of Love. Anyway, just a thought. So where are we? Oh my gosh, it's already time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. But first, oh my, it must be time for some feedback. Hey, all right, thank you to everyone. I am so excited. I'm probably going to say this every single week, but I'm so glad to be back. I'm so glad you guys are listening. I'm glad I've gotten some great responses. I even got some new Podomatic entries from Stan, who was actually listening and paid attention and loves me, clearly. Great feedback from my son. He was thrilled to death to read everyone's commentary on Facebook and on the website, and he's thrilled to death. So thank you guys for watching his video. It's just good to be here. I appreciate everything you guys do for me, really. But now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. And then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, first thing on the master list, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta talk. This is where I pull back the curtain a little bit, talk about the podcast, the website, just things going on here with the whole Nerd Pride operation, and the whole operation, by the way. It's me. Just me. I've decided after last week's episode that I don't like swearing on the podcast. You know, I've kind of, in the intervening year-ish that I took off there, I've kind of loosened up things on the website, and so we're not, you know, the language isn't as big an issue. We're not really censoring anything for the most part. Being more laid back about it. And, you know, people who know me in real life know that, yeah, I have the capacity to swear like a sailor. I'm really good at it. If you listen to my last podcast, the Animal Cast, we were filthy, as I've said many times. And so I thought, you know, we've loosened up a little bit, maybe, you know, slip in a little stuff here. So, on last week's podcast, episode 44, I said bullshit. And, afterwards, and I did it intentionally because I wanted to slip that in there and see how it felt. And so, you know, when it came up in context, I felt, you know, all right, let's use it and see what happens. And it turns out I didn't really care much for it. It just wasn't, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just not, there wasn't a reason for it, I suppose. And I'm not saying I'm going to shy away from it, necessarily. I mean, I am. I'm going to be a little more cautious. But, if something comes up where it's appropriate to throw that in there, if it's from a movie quote or if there's something that just really calls for, whatever piece of language, then I'll certainly put it in there. But I'm not going to be going out of my way for it. It just wasn't comfortable. And then, of course, to end the whole show, last week, wound up doing an F. Mary Kill, which I don't have any problem with F. Mary Kill, but it did end on a robot with a butthole full of razor blades. Again, maybe a little over the edge, maybe not. I mean, no, look, you guys send in the questions, and whatever it is, we'll address it, not address it. We'll see how it all goes. But it was just interesting to me because I thought, hey, loosen up a little bit and see how it goes, and just wasn't comfortable for me. So, well, that's neither here nor there. More important than that, oh my goodness, we've got an unnamed history segment.
Don't know much about history.
And I apologize, this isn't a really well-developed unnamed history segment, but it is from the opening where I did my research for the number 45, and I came up with issue 45, episode 45 of the North Britain newspaper, the most famous issue of that newspaper ever. And so I went back to look at why, and it's a little confusing, this whole story. All takes place in the 18th century, so the mid-1700s, before the American Revolution by a dozen or so years. And John Wilkes, a distant relative, by the way, of John Wilkes Booth, but John Wilkes was a British politician and newspaper man and a bunch of other things, and he really, really hated the Prime Minister at the time. The Prime Minister, the King, was King George III, the same King George III that we had a problem with during the Revolutionary War. And his Prime Minister, if I'm getting this correctly, was the third Earl of Bute, Lord Bute, also a man named John Stuart, but he was known as Lord Bute, and he was the Prime Minister. And Wilkes had a huge problem with this and made no secret of it and spoke out against him on a regular basis and was really... I mean, really snotty and racist, and also, I mean, because Bute was a Scotsman, and so it was invariably Wilkes always just referred to him as the Scot, and they had this ugly back and forth, and John Wilkes published a newspaper called The North Briton, North Briton being another term for Scotland. He was making fun of the newspaper The Briton, which I believe was owned by Bute, may have been. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. Irrelevant. And he published most of what came out in the North Briton was published anonymously because freedom of speech was not a solid thing and something you get yourself jailed for. And so therefore he published most of his stuff anonymously in here. And one of the things that he wrote was issue 45 of the paper, where apparently it was the end of the Seven Years' War, which here in the United States we would call that the French and Indian War. But the Seven Years' War wound up being one of, maybe not technically a world war, but it was the first globe-spanning war. So all of Europe was involved in this. The Americas, Russia got in on it. It touched the Philippines, the coast of India, forts in Africa. I think really Australia and Antarctica were the only continents not hit by the Seven Years' War. And at the end of the Seven Years' War, between England and France were the two main competitors. At the end of the Seven Years' War, France, as part of their peace agreement, France traded off pretty much all of Canada, and this just amazes me, almost all of Canada, for in exchange for a sugar colony at Guadalupe, a little tiny sugar colony, because at the time France believed that, well, the sugar colony is hugely profitable, and Canada really, as Voltaire put it, it's just some acres of snow, really. I mean, what good is that? So, personally, I think England got the way better part of the deal here, but they didn't think so at the time. And when King George agreed to this this peace treaty with France, Treaty of Paris, I believe, Wilkes in the North Briton put out this scathing review of the treaty and this scathing review of King George himself, and specifically laid all of the blame for it entirely on the shoulders of Lord Bute. And as a result, he was arrested and jailed for it. And it took a while. I mean, this guy was, you know, a sitting member of parliament, and, you know, he had other things going on for him, a guy with lots of money. And so it took a while to get to it, but they eventually had a court declare that, by the best evidence available to them, John Wilkes certainly was the author of issue 45 of The North Briton, and therefore he's fully culpable for everything that was printed therein, and therefore he goes to prison. And so, as a result, and I've probably got 3/4 of the details wrong on this story because I skimmed through and then I realized skimming it wasn't giving me the proper picture, so I did some research. I actually read King George's speech to Parliament where he talked about the treaty and accepting it, and then I read issue 45 where I read the response to it and all the scathing stuff that went into it, and I still barely understand all the details and nuances of what was going on. But the end result is whether or not it was a good treaty, whether or not it was a good deal for England, whether or not the whole point was the king made a deal and someone was willing to publish a paper that said he was wrong. Not just say he was wrong, but call him and the prime minister names and make a huge fuss about it, and was jailed for it. So no matter who's on the side of right here, free speech was on trial and didn't fare well because he got locked up, but he became the number 45 and issue 45 of North Briton became a rallying point for free speech advocates down the road. And therefore, the importance of the number 45 and this episode, episode 45 of Nerd Pride Radio. It's time to visit my gaming table!
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. All right, once again, what am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about Pathfinder. You know I am. And, oh my goodness, we played a session in Roll20 where Talvin, bless him, paid for an actual subscription to Roll20 for our game master, Darks. And as part of that, one of the new benefits we get is dynamic lighting. This is amazing. You guys have got to see this thing in action. I'll even describe it to you, and it's just, I don't know if I can convey the feel of it. But the whole point is, the game master takes the time to mark down where the sources of light are in the room, who's carrying a torch, who has dark vision, who has low light vision, blah, blah, blah. And therefore, he marks it out, and we had it shared so that when we're moving around the map, all of us could see anything that anyone else could see. So it was kind of a shared vision of what was going on. But he could have switched that off. He could have turned it so that each character, each player can only see the portion of the map that his own character can see. And I kind of wish we had done that too, because I would love to try that out. Because I'm telling you what, moving along with just this little pool of light, and there's these windy corridors, and so as someone goes around the corridor, you slowly see more of the hallway light up, and oh my god, is that a room? Is there doors up there? Because it gets dimmer as you go out. So you have to go up and take a closer look at it, blah, blah. Oh my god, it was amazing. And in fact, got to one point, but highlighting this with the torches and whatnot, my character does not have low light vision. My character does not have dark vision. I require light. And so I had a blank torch with a light spell cast on it. But equivalent of a torch, same thing. And it occurred to me as we get into the big room and there's a winged demon up on the dais and it's summoning more ghoul demon, I don't know what things they were, these evil beasties for us to battle. And I realized that technically I can see all this because, well, you know, Jeff's dark vision is enough to cover the whole room for me. But if it was just my character, I can't see but 20, 30 feet past my nose. I can't see anything in this room. I can't see all the way down to the other end. So here's everyone gasping and wailing about, oh my god, what are we going to do? And my character would have been literally in the dark, had no idea what was going on there. And it wasn't until, and I actually played that out because as I'm looking at the map, I realized I wouldn't be able to see. I would have no idea what was going on. Nobody's explaining it to me. So I waited until Lucy's character, Dwyn, goes running up onto the dais and she's carrying a torch with her. And now, between the two of us, our two torches, I realize, oh, that's what everyone's going on about. Okay, let's get out the bow and start shooting. But it was just awesome. Dynamic lighting is the shiz, guys. It is unbelievable. I cannot wait to play some more because we left off right in the middle of that battle. We are still facing Winged Demon and its minion and whatever else is going on. I mean, we left off right at the end of a combat round. So it is time to pick right back up where we left off, and I'm still with the limited lighting and all that. Absolutely loved it. And as long as we're talking about Pathfinder, I have to share the most epic level up story I've ever witnessed. It was wonderful. I told you that we got to level up and how excited I was last week. I mentioned that we leveled up. It's the first time I've ever gotten to do it. It was wonderful. I'm a second level bard. Yay me. And so we get in there and everyone has submitted their character sheets except, of course, Lucy, who is hopeless apparently when it comes to the actual rules. Fantastic role player, horrible with the rules. But that's what we're all here for. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, everyone submits their new character sheets, and Jeff is playing a barbarian, Dorak. And I even went and looked at the character sheet he submitted and saw that, okay, he's second level barbarian. Holy crap, look at his hit points. Things are off the charts. Sweet, he's going to kick some ass in combat. This is going to go well. Really excited. And then we got to the end of an encounter in the dungeon, and at the end of this encounter, someone was wounded, and Dorak, he's been playing that he's cleaned up. He was the drunken barbarian, and he's cleaned up and he's acting sober, and he makes a couple of comments about it, but not a huge deal until this moment when he says, "Here, let me help you." And he pulls out a holy symbol and lays hands on this woman and heals. And my jaw drops because it's still, I'm not understanding. Okay, what barbarian power did you take? How do you even, seriously, is one of his rage powers healing? How do you do that? And then it finally dawned on me. Oh, that character sheet was a lie. He took a level of cleric, that son of a bitch. It was really cool. It was really cool. And he hasn't written it all out yet, so I haven't read the story, but he explained that essentially he had an epiphany after talking to some of the rest of us in the group and realizing what's at stake in this world and where his character's going and what he's been doing. His character had an epiphany. And apparently some god spoke to him and he realized it was time to sober up, get his life straight, and start doing good in the world. Wow. It was jaw-dropping. It was really cool. So kudos to you, Jeff. Absolutely loved it. I honestly, applause, my hat's off. It was a great scene. I also did some more gaming with my kids this week and more Pathfinder. And it was, really, I'm not going to do a whole segment on this and give you guys all the gory details. You can go out. I have a thread for it on the forums. If you're interested in the details, go read up on it. But the big point is, I was supposed to go to a scouting event this weekend with my 10-year-old now. And we were supposed to go to a scouting event, and I had everything packed up. We were ready to go. And I mean, we're literally 2 hours from walking out the door to get to this thing. I go check my email, and I realize, oh, crap, it was last night. Oh, God, we completely missed it. It was supposed to be this overnight lock-in event. They were going to get a bunch of badges, and he was going to hang out with all his friends. And I just screwed up. I had the wrong day in my head, and I just screwed up. And it was terrible. I felt so bad. I felt like such an idiot. And as a result of that, my wife, being as sweet as she is, tells the kid, hey, you know what? At this point, Dad feels so bad. You can ask him for pretty much anything, and you're going to get it. And so, you know, she thought maybe we'd go out to a movie together or go, you know, have some father-son time and hang out. No, you know what he wanted? He wanted McDonald's, and he wanted to play Pathfinder. And not just a short, quick session like we've been doing. I want one of those ones where we play for hours like you used to do. Oh, damn it. All right, we'll do that. And we did. And it was really, really good. We played hours, and they had a great time. And everyone pitched in, and it was all cinematic, and it was wonderful. And so now they are a bunch of escaped slaves on the run and having a great time. So it was really cool. But enough of Pathfinder, enough of my gaming table. Let me see where we're going. Oh, my goodness, science fiction double feature! Science fiction double feature! That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. And I, you know what? One of these days, I should set up a freaking camera in here. I should turn a camera on myself because, again, two movies. I'm holding up the number two so you guys can see it. I do this all the time, and I gotta quit explaining it to you because I'm sure you guys don't give a crap what gestures I'm making. But But if I did a video version of this, you guys could at least the gestures wouldn't be going to waste. That's kind of what I'm saying. But time for movie reviews. Actually, one review and one preview. So, the review is The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. I hate that. Oh, I love the movie. Love the movie. All right. You guys remember I reviewed the first movie and I loved the first movie. I thought the first movie was great. It was a ton of fun. It was like a kid's version of Lord of the Rings, which is what The Hobbit, the book, was. It's a kid's version of Lord of the Rings. It's a happy tale. It's not all this deadly serious politics and all this, although there's some of the politics in this one too. But in general, The Hobbit is just a light tale. It's a light adventure tale from Bilbo to Frodo to tell about this. And so you expect it to be a little over the top and a little embellished and all this. And so I loved the first movie, but as it turns out, watching the second movie, the first movie's a little rough. Second movie, he has completely found his footing. Peter Jackson is right on top of this, and the movie flows and it's just spectacular fun. The whole, elf-orc combat down the river, one of the most beautiful, exciting things I've ever seen in my life. Loved every moment of it. So this movie really, really paid off. All right, and the whole Bilbo and the Dragon, great stuff. But you know, you guys have probably already seen it anyway. You don't need my review. You don't need me to tell you that if you like Lord of the Rings, if you like Hobbit, you like this movie. You need to go see it. No, what's more important is I'm still hung up on the pronunciation of Smaug. It's Smaug. Smaug. S-M-A-U-G, smug. In American English, at least, A-U almost always says aw, or maybe ah, as in laugh, but it's almost always an aw sound, smog. And yet, everybody in this movie pronounces it smaug. Is that a British thing? Is it an Australian, New Zealand thing? Is that how they pronounce A-U over there? Do you go to the hospital because you're suffering from head trauma? Is that how they say it? No, it's trauma. Trauma. But I don't know. I don't know enough Britishers, I guess. Maybe that is the proper pronunciation. All I know is that every time I hear Smaug, it drives me crazy. Someone set me straight. And I'm sure as soon as I get done, someone's going to point out to me, you know, probably 36 American English words with AU that says ow. I'm sure that they're out there. I just can't think of anything off the top of my head because I don't want to. I want to be right about this. Darn it. Smaug. Oh. But that's the review. The preview is I'm looking at Terry Gilliam. Not Terry Gilliam himself, but his entry on IMDb, or at least I was, because he's got a new movie coming out that I'm kind of excited about. The reviews are a little lackluster. Apparently, I'm guessing it was a festival release, and it's going to get a wide release in the U.S. coming up. But he's got a movie coming up called The Zero Theorem. And now, I'm mixed on Terry Gilliam. His movies are, I see the brilliance in them, but a lot of times I get to the end and I'm not quite satisfied, or it was just a little off. I mean, Baron Munchausen, Time Bandits, Brazil, all of these were ones that, I mean, there's a pure Gilliam, and they're really good movies, and yet not perfect movies. Maybe just something a little rough about it, or something a little, but good, fun, Holy Grail, awesome movie. 12 Monkeys, top notch. I love 12 Monkeys. I've seen all those, but I haven't gone in for a lot of his other stuff, and stuff that I've meant to watch, but I just never get quite excited about it. The Fisher King, never seen it. Tideland, Dr. Parnassus, I just haven't quite gotten there. But what I found out is, because I went and I realized that, I'll get back to Zero Theorem in a minute, I realized that I'm a little short on my Gilliam stuff, and I like Terry Gilliam. I like him a lot, and I like his style, and even when I don't quite like his movies, or even when I hate his movies, I still appreciate his style, and I appreciate what he's going for. And so I go to Netflix, and Netflix doesn't have any of these. Not a single, I mean, they have them on disc, but I want streaming. And this is where I found Crackle. All right. Remember last week I talked about Jerry Seinfeld doing Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and you could get that on the Crackle channel, which I get Crackle streaming through my Roku box. Roku! And it turns out Crackle carries a lot of this Terry Gilliam stuff that I haven't seen yet, like for free. Like, all I gotta do is watch a commercial every 15, 20 minutes. I can live with that. I'm excited. So, I've actually started making a list of Crackle stuff that I'm gonna watch, and hopefully right now I'm watching Sherlock. So, that's gonna take me a while. But after I get through Sherlock and, oh shoot, the new season of Game of Thrones is coming on disc. But okay, but after I get done with those, I'll get back to my Terry Gilliam viewing. I'm sure I will. Nothing else could possibly come up before that. But anyway, he's got The Zero Theorem, which was just released in Europe, and hopefully it's coming to the U.S. soon. And Zero Theorem is a computer hacker's quest to discover the reason for humanity's existence, who keeps getting interrupted by the management, and the management is capitalized. So it sounds a lot like Brazil in ways, exploring some of the same themes. And sadly, the reviews for it, the early reviews say, oh yeah, it's good. Oh, I see what he's going for. But it's a little, for a futuristic, dystopian thriller like this, they said it feels a lot like Brazil. It feels old fashioned, that it's kind of stuck in this late 80s, early 90s kind of vibe. I don't care. I'm excited to see it anyway. The whole thing sounds wonderful. I'm ready to watch it. And yeah, I'll probably get to the end and go, yeah, it wasn't great, but that was good. So, but I'm looking forward to that one. But even more than that, you know what I wish I could see The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, which obviously doesn't exist. But I love Don Quixote. I love the story of Don Quixote. I've got a picture of Don Quixote on my wall at my office because I love Don Quixote. I grew up with my dad had a picture of Don Quixote over his bed, this huge, huge framed oil painting that I'm sure my mom hated and it was ugly as sin, but I loved it. My brother owns it now. It's in his house, or at least I think it still is. I hope so. God, you better not have gotten rid of that, you son of a... All right. Anyway, but it has always been Gilliam's obsession to do Quixote. He has this movie, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, that he's wanted to do, and it's still listed on IMDb. It's listed as being in pre-production, but there's no cast, no date, no details, no nothing. And this is a movie that, remember, in 2003, there was a documentary that detailed his first attempt to make this labor of love and how horribly that failed on him. So that was over a decade ago that they made a documentary about the failure of the first try at this movie. So I seriously doubt he's ever going to get this done. But God, wouldn't that be kind of cool? I would love to see that. And decide to move to the next segment, but I gotta scroll the page down here. I'm a little lost. Oh, you know what? It's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
Not exactly, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. Podcasts. That's what we're about this week. Podcast, podcast, podcast. Obviously I love podcasts. I make one, but I also listen to a lot of podcasts, and for a long time, I kind of languished on it. I had some ones that I listened to regularly, but it was only like two or three of them. Like, I listened to, what are all of them? I listened to the WTF podcast with Mark Maron. I think that's one of the best interview shows out there. I listened to Fear the Boot. I enjoy Fear the Boot a lot as a gaming podcast. I listened to Walking the Room, which Walking the Room reminds me a lot of the Animal Cast. It is just two guys sitting around and jabbing at each other and just talking. And they're just funny. It's Greg Behrendt and Dave Anthony, stand-up comedians. And this is just, and occasionally they'll have a guest, but usually it's just the two of them talking and bouncing stuff off of each other. And I just find it really entertaining. Well, now I've found some new podcasts, and so it's time to share them with you. And I've given each of them at least a dozen or so episodes to make sure that I like them. Because I'll try out new podcasts every once in a while. And generally, I would say 90% of them don't make it past episode 3. I'll get the most, you know, 3 or 4 most recent podcasts. And if I don't like it after 2, 3, 4, I'm done. I delete it from my list. Never go back. But these are ones out of all the ones I've been trying out. These are the ones that have actually stuck with me. So, ones to try out, if you're interested, is FOFOP, F-O-F-O-P, FOFOP. There's a long explanation behind the name. Doesn't matter. It is hosted by Will Anderson, and he has a guest every week who is his substitute, Charlie. Charlie was the old host of the show, who's no longer with him. And Will Anderson is an Australian comedian who is really, really funny, and he just talks about life. Sometimes it's kind of a half interview. Sometimes it's just them talking about the business or just sharing stories about people they know and things that they've done. And most of the people who he has on the show are friends of his, but not always. And I just really like Fofop. I was introduced to this one because Will was a guest on Walking the Room, and his rapport with those guys was really good, and I just found him really entertaining. And these guys have raved about his podcast for ages. And so finally I broke down and started listening and really like it. So Fofop is one you guys should check out. Also, right in line with this particular show, Comedy Film Nerds, and because it has nerd in the title, Comedy Film Nerds is a couple of guys, Chris and Graham, who, again, stand-up comics, but they have usually a guest on every week, but not always, and they just talk about films. They talk about stuff that they've just seen recently, stuff that's coming out that they're excited about, movie news. They do a review of the DVDs that are coming out. And sometimes they just talk, and sometimes they wander afield and they don't talk about movies for a good 20 minutes. And then they realize, oh yeah, by the way, all right, well, we got to get back to this. Let's do this. And again, it's just entertaining stuff. They have good people on, and it's just fun to listen to them talking. And, you know, and I like movies and I like movie news. And so I'm always interested in that. But more than that, it's just about the conversations they have. So I like that one. And then, Probably Science. Probably Science is just great. It is, again, another one where they talk about science and current events and stuff going on. And a lot of times, you know, everyone at the table, there's, I think, three regular hosts, and then they'll sometimes have a guest, which the guest could be, you know, could be someone famous, you know, film star, could be another stand-up comic, could be an actual scientist. But whoever they have on, all of them just bring a list of, here's all the stuff that they've seen in the news lately, just stuff that crossed their path that they're interested in. And so then they just start sharing around the table. A lot of times they all have the same stuff, so they've all got information on it. And it's all science-y, nerdy math stuff and physics stuff and biology stuff. And it's just science-y, and it's really fun. So Probably Science. And I also left off of my list. I forgot to mention, why can't I do it? FilmSack. FilmSack is one I've watched for years, and I've probably mentioned it before here. But of all the stuff I listen to, those are, it's like the 6 or 7 or 8 of them that I listen to most often. So try them out. Really, seriously, you need something new for your ears? Go get some of these and fill up your space with them. It's nice. And, the timing is just great lately, because here I am at the half-hour mark, and it's already time for the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. This week's quote is entirely absent. I am looking at a big blank space here where I normally paste in the quote of the week, so therefore, no quote. Sorry, dudes. I don't know what I was thinking. I've got all the Podomatic. It's all right there. I filled in all of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Everything's right there. Somehow, I completely forgot to get the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. So maybe I'll just do 2 next week. Will that be fair? Will you guys forgive me? All right. Because otherwise, Podomatic! Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Do you ask that? Because if you did, hey, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Send in your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. And of course, I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Oh, and our first number, straight out the gate, 73. And that is Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul says, could Xena beat Superman? I mean, she can clearly wallop Batman, and he can beat Superman, right? So what you're saying, Paul, is that by the transitive property of beat ass, she could therefore beat Superman? Yeah, no, look, clearly not. Xena cannot beat Superman because she's a woman. So, no, that's not why at all. That would be wrong. First off, yes, I think Xena could beat Batman, but I think it'd be closer than you're thinking. But here's the deal. Superman and Batman, when we match them up, Batman can only beat Superman because he knows Superman and he's planned for how to kill Superman. He could take Superman down in a heartbeat because he's ready for that. Xena is a completely unknown threat. All right. If Superman were an unknown threat, if Superman were encountered out of nowhere and Batman had no prior planning for this, no prior knowledge, then Superman would completely grind him into paste. Superman would take him out with a single shot and this whole thing would be over. Similarly, if he comes up against Xena with no background, no knowledge, no anything, it would be a close one. I think actually Xena is right on the level of a lot of mid-level supervillains, so, or superheroes for that matter. Clearly, she's supposed to be the hero. So, I think it would be an even match. And it just, I guess it depends on whose story it is. If it's Batman's story, he's going to beat the villain Xena. If it's Xena's story, you know, goes the other way. Number 46. Oh, again from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul says, between Danny Elfman and Clint Mansell, who would you like to score your role-playing games? Danny Elfman I know because Danny Elfman does the music for everything in the world. But I'm not familiar with Clint Mansell, but this is where I'm prepared. I actually have my browser is already open and is already set with Google, IMDb, Wikipedia, everything already completely open for me. So, Clint Mansell. Oh, Clint Mansell. Definitely Clint Mansell. Holy crap. Pie, Requiem for a Dream, basically everything Darren Aronofsky has ever done, and then a bunch of things I don't recognize off this list. Black Swan is in there. So essentially, Clint Mansell is the guy who does all of the Aronofsky movie scores, which clearly that's who I want. I love Aronofsky movies. I love all of this. So therefore, yeah, no, that's the music I want. Danny Elfman, on the other hand, is, oh my God. Have you guys ever looked at Danny Elfman's IMDb photo? I don't know what I thought he would look like because I've never thought of Danny Elfman as being anything but a disembodied name that goes with the music of every movie in the world. But go to IMDb and check out his IMDb photo. Apparently, he is the bastard child of James Spader and Elton John. I am not kidding you. I mean, like the resemblance to those two, in this photo at least, is so uncanny. It's just creepy, dude. Yeah, no, I definitely don't want that guy scoring my games. Not going to happen. Number 48. From a Mr. Brasky. Brasky says, they're making a sequel to Bubba Hotep. It's called Bubba Nosferatu. Thoughts? Really? But, okay. Yo, bring it. Bring it. I loved Bubba Hotep. I love Bruce Campbell. I'm enamored of this concept. I will take anything. If it's in that same vein, that same sense of humor, I am ready for it. Hold on. Oh, see, since I've got IMDb open. But see, Bruce Campbell announced that he is not going to be involved with Bubba Nosferatu. It is a prequel where Elvis is making a movie on the Louisiana Bayou and is accosted by a coven of she-devils. Yeah, I don't know if I can go for that. Yeah, it's Bubba Nosferatu, Curse of the She-Vampires. Hey, you know what? If it's written by the same people and it's got that same sense of humor, that same sensibility, I'm still excited to see it. That would be really, really cool. I'm just afraid that after the cult following that Bubba Hotep gained, I would hate to see them try and parlay that into just a straight up farcical horror thing. So, I don't know. There's no other production notes on it. It's not like the thing's coming out anytime soon. So, but it would be cool if they could do it right. I love Bubba Hotep. Who doesn't love Bubba Hotep? One of the funniest damn things ever. I really enjoyed that movie, beginning to end. So, but that's just me. Number 5 from Zimney Pot. Zimney Pot says, why do people talk about girly things, but never talk about boy-y things? Boy-y. Boy-y. All right, I got that. Because we are a sexist society, and maleness is the default. So therefore, if maleness is the default, you don't have to talk about things being boy-y or boyish, because, well, by default, all things are masculine. And it's only when things are not masculine that we need to actually come up with a designator to say that they are separate from what's normal. That's why. We are horribly sexist, and that's just the way things go. And it's up to us to change that. I just don't know how. 16. Hey, this one's from Stan. Stan says, aside from the new TV stereotype of the black nerd, is that new? Is that, all right. Anyway, no, yeah. I mean, Die Hard had the black, all right, anyway. Aside from the new TV stereotype of the black nerd, why is nerddom so white? How can we change that? Well, all right. First off, I don't specifically know if the black nerd is new. I mean, Urkel was there, and whoever the computer hacker was from Die Hard, and we're seeing Asian nerds in lots of places. But on average, nerddom is pretty white in its media representation. And again, it's because we're a very racist society, and white is the default. So therefore, when you come up with a character, I mean, when you invent a character for something, instinctually, I think most people writing, especially most male writers, you develop a character and your first thought is that it is a white male. Just by default, that's what your brain comes up with when you think of a new character, is that you're thinking of all these other things about them. They're interesting because of this, and they're moody, and they do this for a job, and they have these skills, and you just kind of put that on the blank slate of white male as your starting point. And if they're going to be a woman or a minority, well, that's an extra quirky thing that you add on elsewhere. And so I personally make an effort in my own writing, mostly for games that I'm developing and stuff. But when I come up with characters for anything, if the character is going to be a white male immediately, one of the first things I do is I get the character fleshed out and then go, okay, does that character work as a female? Does that character work as another race, another gender, another anything? I mean, I was writing a transhuman future story which involved various species, and they're all genetically designed species out in space. And after a while I realized, yeah, but my two main characters, I had one male and one female, and that my two main characters are both human. So really, is that even necessary? I mean, do I need to have my main characters be human just so that the reader can relate to them better? I mean, how would it work if the main character was one of the dog people? How would it work if they were, you know, and I really had to rethink that story and go, wow, you know what? It actually might even work better that way. So, but how do we change the whiteness of nerddom? By doing exactly that we ourselves, as we're developing, because you specifically ask about TV characters, so I'm assuming you mean in media. And the best I can say is that we have to develop that stuff ourselves, make sure that we're including it, and make sure that we're patronizing, giving our money to things that support diversity, support a worldview that we enjoy, and being careful about putting money towards stuff like the Avatar movie, the Airbender movie, where all the good guys in an Asian culture were cast with white people, and the bad guys were cast as Asians. Weird. And it wasn't even just that they cast as white. It wasn't that these were the best people for the role. No, they sent out their casting call specifically asking for Caucasians first. That, oh yeah, this role is for a Caucasian or other, which is code for, yeah, we're looking for a white guy, but, you know, if you're really good, we might take something else. They were looking for white people for that movie. That's just ridiculous. The fact that 47 Ronin, and I know Keanu is quarter Japanese or whatever he is. He's technically part Asian, but no, Keanu's a white guy, and in the role, they cast him as a white guy in the movie. And in the original 47 Ronin, there was no white guy or half white guy. There was nothing. They have 47 Ronin. They have 47 awesome Japanese characters to choose from that they could have made into the focus, into the lead for their movie, 47 Ronin. But instead of picking one of those, no, they invented a completely new character specifically so they could cast a white guy. Come on. Really? Is that what we do? Kind of sad. Have I even answered your question? I don't even know if I'm on topic anymore. Number 55, Zimney Pod again. Zimney asks me, how old is the oldest cell in your body? I'm going to make a wild guess and say 40 plus years old. I'm thinking that's right, because I know that most cells in my body, most of my blood, my skin, my hair, my everything else, most of that cycles out. That you know, you get, you know, old cells die off, new cells are formed. And I think I read a stat somewhere that said your entire body cycles pretty much everything through every 7 years. So within 7 years, you're virtually not, physically not even the same substance that you were 7 years ago. However, when I read that, I believe I read that the only exception is certain cells in your bones, that the bones are building hard structures that aren't being replaced in the same fashion. And I don't know how accurate that is, because I know bone marrow is, but I don't know the bones themselves, I believe, are a lot more permanent. Like, I assume that the cells in my teeth, this is hard bone. I don't think those are being replaced. So I'm going to guess that since I am 40, almost 44 years old here, I'm going to guess that the oldest cell in my body is close to 40 years old, if not 44, if not something that I was born with. If, you know, if there's still pieces of original bones still in there that have been built on. I'm going to guess that that's the right answer, but I'm not sure. 78. Serious Paul again. If you had to choose between having no legs, but all the RPGs you could ever want, or being rich, but having to never game again, which one would you choose? That is a sucky choice. At this point, I am going to go with being rich. If I had to give up gaming, which would kill me, I would hate to give up gaming, but if I had to give up gaming in order to become rich and thus secure the financial future of my family, as opposed to having no legs, which having no legs doesn't preclude me from being a productive member of society, but it does make it a lot harder for me, and it would make it, I certainly wouldn't be able to do my current job if I had no legs, and so it would make it a lot harder for me to earn a living and take care of my family and put my kids through school and do all the other things I need to do. So really, gaming is just secondary at this point, and I got to go with the option that leaves me as a more productive member of society. At least, again, not to say you can't be productive without legs. I know many people with non-functioning legs that, not many, too, who do great and are really, really capable and talented and intelligent and productive. Not saying that you can't do that. I'm just saying it would be a lot harder for me. It would be a hardship that would be very, I mean, we'd have to either build a ramp on this house or probably move, because I wouldn't be able to get to the basement anymore. I wouldn't be able to get upstairs. I wouldn't be able to, this would be a really bad house to have a wheelchair in. That front hallway is really narrow and awkward. It would be tough. Yeah, I would not want that at all. 63. Serious Paul again. Serious Paul says, in a breakdance fight between the cast members of Lost, who lays it down? Okay, the cast members of Lost. Oh, it's been a couple of years now. All right, I'm gonna go with Hurley. I mean, seriously, look at him. In that entire group, who do you think can breakdance? Not Dr. Jack. All right, certainly not Sawyer. Come on, are you kidding me? It's gonna be Hurley. Hurley is gonna be the one that can throw down. Yeah, no. Don't go naming off black guys. That's just racist of you. No. Hurley. Hurley grew up with breakdancing. And he's a big fat dude, sure. But once he gets moving, he can pop and lock with the best of them, man. He'll get down there, you watch him spin, the whole thing, you will be amazed. And then Benjamin Linus from The Others is going to come out, and you're going to think that, oh God, no, Linus can breakdance? Oh, he's going to throw down? Really? Really? No. Turns out Linus has like a breakdancing gimp on a chain that he brings out with him, that the others have been keeping him aside just for such a necessity. Oh yeah, we're ready. And the gimp, of course, will make a great effort, and you'll think that he's got it, but you know, then Hurley's gonna drop the bomb on him and just wipe him out. I honestly think Hurley's gonna be the breakdancing champion of the Lost Island. 14. This is from my friend Stan. Stan says, do you bring a lunch from home or do you go out for lunch most work days? Ah, well, usually I take a lunch to work with me. Sometimes I come home for lunch. I almost never eat out at work. We even have a cafeteria at work where, I mean, we're a hospital, so there's a cafeteria I could go down and pay $4 for my lunch every day if I wanted to. And a lot of people I work with do that. I can't see spending $4 on lunch. I really can't, especially when, you know, I'm always trying to stick to my diet. So, you know, for me, yeah, some leftovers from home is usually what I have. Like today, I just threw together, you know, I looked in the fridge before I left for work this morning, threw together a salad out of just what was laying in there, and that's all I had. So, and it's usually something like that. Or I'll bring one of my homemade burritos, or, oh, God, have I talked about my homemade burritos? Yeah, you know what? Not enough time for that. Maybe I'll bring that up on the next podcast. But yeah, I almost always bring lunch from home. And the only exception would be like if there's a special occasion, bosses are in town, so we're all going to go out together, or, you know, we've got visitors, something. But in general, nah. I just bring lunch. Number 8. Again from Stan. See, Stan sent me some Podomatic entries. Where's the rest of you guys? Stan says, in all of science fiction, movies, books, comics, what alien do you find the most stupid? What was the stupid E.T. ripoff? Mac and Me. That's the stupidest one. Oh, that thing was horrible. The worst special effects. And he was creepy, and he was, or the Great Gazoo. I would accept, or Mork, now that we're coming up with stupid, jumping the shark kind of aliens. Not Mixleplick, although he's pretty stupid. Batmite. Batmite from the Batman comics. Was he an alien? Was Batmite an alien, or was he just, was he extra dimensional? Does that count as alien? I mean, I'm still gonna go with Mac, but, okay, speaking of Batmite. Oh my God, I just read, maybe it was an article, maybe it was a podcast, something. Somebody was talking about Chibi Batman. Do you know about this one? That apparently, Batman and Superman wind up crossing over into an alternate universe. They go to a Chibi universe. Oh, maybe it was a Cracked article. Ugh, I hate to be passing on Cracked stuff, but, okay. Anyway, Batman and Superman cross over into a Chibi universe, and so everybody over there is into cute little big-headed childlike characters, and they're all cute and cuddly and adorable. And so they meet up with Chibi Superman and Chibi Batman, who knows what the original conflict was or what they had to help him do. But in conversation with Chibi Batman, regular Batman asks him and says, "So, what happened to you? What made you become Batman? How did this come about?" And Chibi Batman, being all cute and cuddly from Chibi Universe, says, you know, he's very serious about it. It's, "Oh, it was terrible. When I was just a kid, I was leaving a movie theater with my parents. And out in front of the theater, some thug came along and he shoved them to the ground, right there in the street in front of everybody. And so I was inspired to put on the costume, and I vowed that I would never let anyone shove anybody ever again." That's Chibi Batman, and it's adorable. And so then, of course, Chibi Batman says, So what happened to you?" And Batman couldn't bring himself to do it. He did not have the heart to break the real story to Chibi Batman. So I thought that was adorable. Anyway, was it just, oh, aliens. Yeah, no, Mac. Mac from Mac and Me. Stupidest alien ever. 28. Oh, Stan again. Stan says, "Is Scientology a religion, cult, scam, or what?" Oh, yeah, a little of all three, clearly. I mean, at this point, it qualifies as a religion, and people practice it as a religion and follow it as a religion, so I'm not going to deny them that. Cult status, there's certainly news reports that indicate that they do cult-like things, that they work to separate people from their families and their support systems, and that they work to isolate people and get as much money and resources from them, which leads us straight to the scam portion of it, where, oh, please, the cost of taking lessons, the auditing, the Thetan removal, I have no idea what all the details are, but clearly It's about getting money from people. And the thing about it is, L. Ron Hubbard started off before Scientology ever became a thing, before he wrote Dianetics, before any of this. L. Ron talked about being L. Ron, as if it's just one name. L. Ron Hubbard talked about the money he was making from science fiction, and he said it outright, yeah, well, you know what? If you really want to make money, you need to found yourself a religion. That's where the real money's at. He, like, laid out a plan ahead of time to say that if you want to scam people out of a lot of cash, here's how you do it. And then he proceeded to do exactly that, but called it a religion, and people bought into it as if he had never said anything earlier. Which I'm sure at this point they are just convinced, oh, those are just lies that people made up to try and sully the great name of L. Ron Hubbard or whatever. Who knows? But no, he laid out his plan and then said, he's laid out it many times, that, yo, okay, and then if people speak out against you, you put a stop to that. You shut people up using these bullying tactics, and you go after them in this way, and you do this and this and this. Laid out the blueprints and then proceeded to do exactly what he said he was going to do. So he worked out exactly how this was a scam before he implemented it, told us how he was going to scam people, and then did it anyway. So it's clearly a scam. Number 19, a Mr. Dire Cat. Dire Cat says, would you rather be a fruit or a vegetable? Fruit. Clearly fruit. Because, really, most of the interesting vegetables that are out there are actually fruits. Peanuts are actually fruits. Tomatoes are actually fruits. We all know that. Fruits are interesting. Vegetables, not so much. I mean, what are you getting for vegetables? Celery? Ugh. Broccoli? No, these are dull. These are dull and horrible. No, fruits are vibrant and exciting and different. Fruits are the ones that are intended to travel and spread their seed. These guys are living the good life. Definitely want to be a fruit. 99. Again from Dire Cat. Okay, would you rather be Super Mario or Samus? Oh. That is tough. I am going to go with Super Mario. In fact, I'm definitely going to go with Super Mario. I want to be Super Mario because I think he's got the better world to live in. A little silly, maybe. All right. Certainly goony, but better. And weird to say, less violent, less dangerous. Not that there isn't a bunch of danger going on, but honestly, after Mario solves whatever game he's in, everything goes back to normal. Everything's good. All the evil just goes away, and we all get to live happily ever after until the next game. But in general, it's pretty safe. Whereas Samus is way more badass, and Samus is a way more interesting character, but Samus lives in a really, really dangerous world. I mean, that's the problem with a lot of these badasses is, you know, I don't mind the badass characters, but I wouldn't want to be them. If I have to put up with that same crap day after day, all the danger, all the horrors, all the nightmares you must have, the PTSD has to be horrible for video game characters. And I think when it comes down to that, I think Mario's got the better life. I mean, honestly, look, yeah, there's no Samus golf, right? There's no Samus tennis. There's no Samus poker, right? Mario gets to do all the fun stuff. He gets to do all the relaxing stuff that I'd want to do if I were actually a video game character rather than being, you know, threatened by aliens and monsters at every turn. That's just me. Last one. Number 96 from Stan. Stan says, would you explain your love of Method One characters? Well, I think I did this a couple episodes ago. I've mentioned Method One characters a few times, but I am happy to explain it again. Because Method One characters are awesome. The idea is you're playing Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder or whatever, and normally when you roll up a character, you roll some dice and you take, you know, you roll four dice and you take the best three and you write down all your numbers. Then you arrange those numbers to match the stats that you want. So, you know, you want to be a fighter, then you put your highest stat on strength and you go from there. Whereas with a Method One character, no, you don't do any of that. There's no picking the best dice. There's no rearranging. There's no nothing. You just take those... in, for example, Pathfinder, you take the three die six, and you roll a number from 3 to 18, and whatever that number is, you write it down for strength. And then you roll the next one, you write that down for dexterity. You take them exactly in order, and then once you've got a resultant set of numbers, you look at them and you figure out something to make out of that. You figure out a character that can use those stats. And to explain my love for that, I love, in a role-playing game, being handed something and being told, okay, now you got to work with this, make it happen. And so therefore, with a method one, you come up with who knows what. All right. For example, the one, and Stan's asking, I'm sure, because we're about to start a method one campaign with him as the game master in about 2 weeks. And in the method one campaign, the character that I rolled up, Dimmy, Dimmy is absolutely worthless in almost every area. He rolled 6, 7, 6, 7. The only thing he had going for him was an 18 in, actually it was a 16 in wisdom, and I boosted it to an 18 with the, anyway, building the character. Anyway, so he has a high wisdom, and that's everything he's got. Everything else is not just bad scores, abysmally bad scores, horrible scores. And I made what I thought was a really fascinating character out of it. So I'm really excited to play that one. But that's a character that I never even, it's a druid. I've never played a druid. I never want to play a druid. And yet, it worked really well here, and I'm really excited about it. Would I have ever created a character that had no strength, no dexterity, no charisma, no nothing? You don't even come up with that as a concept. No, but this time, it works. And it's the same philosophy I have behind Instant Game. I love Instant Game, yeah, because I wrote it and all. Go check out the free games on the free games page at nerdprideradio.com. And I love Instant Game because I like the idea of you roll up a plot point, or you roll up a description, or you roll up just something, and now find a way to make that work in the game. Go, do it. All right, and it puts you on the spot, and it makes you be creative, and you come out with things that you just wouldn't have done otherwise. I listened to, like, on Fear the Boot, on the Fear the Boot God podcast, and I love these guys, bless them, but they constantly talk about how they don't like pre-generated characters, they don't like the idea of a method one character, they don't like the idea of this random stuff, because it takes away their control. It takes away their control in the game. I'm like, you've never tried it. I've had pre-generated characters where I've gone into a game and I just take whatever character the game master gives me, or in a lot of cases where I've been the game master and I just hand them whatever character I want them to play. And watching them make a character their own, and having to, okay, here's the personality I need to take on, and taking that to yourself. And it doesn't matter that you didn't come up with it. You still have to inhabit that character, and you have to make it live. And does it always work? No. Sometimes you come up with these random elements, and it's a little lame, or it's just not quite fitting, whatever. But the times it does work, so worth it. That's why the last Pathfinder game with my kids, one of the things we did, the one where we played for hours the other night, my guilt game, I have a deck of plot twist cards that Pathfinder makes, that Paizo makes. And I've never tried them before, and it was awesome, because one of the problems I have is that when the game goes off the rails, when they go completely in a direction I didn't expect, a lot of times I'm just not prepared, and I try and wing it, and I'm not winging it fast enough, and I feel like I'm doing the same stuff every time that, they go break into a new area, and I feel like I'm designing the exact same encounters and the exact same sort of plots and the same, and it feels lame. But now with the plot twist deck, every time they did something even a little unexpected, and I don't know where it's going, I don't know exactly who's coming around the corner, I don't know exactly what's going to be in this room, doesn't matter. I flip over a plot twist card, and the plot twist card has a theme, and then like four suggestions of maybe different ways to apply it. And every time I'd pull a card, and one of the things on that card, I'd go, oh, no, that's it. That's exactly what we're doing right here. And I'd make it work. As a game master, just being able to insert a random element into the game, It was so exciting, and we had so much fun, and the kids loved every minute of that game. And I had way more fun than I usually do. It was really good. And I attribute a lot of that to having those plot twist cards, having something to take that pressure off of me that okay, I may not have prepared for everything, but that's okay. Even when something different comes up, okay, good, flip over a card. Yeah, we can work with that. Go. So for all those reasons, that's why I like Method One characters. I like the idea of coming up with something unexpected and then being forced to work with it and make a viable, interesting, livable story out of that. Love that. Oh, but that was the last one. So we need a recap of this show from GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, and Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them, love them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them myself. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes, write us a nice review, or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page, click like. It's 9 seconds out of your busy day. You can do that for me. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on our free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up, send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll have fun. Boom! Number 99 from... No, we already did 99. Try again. Much better. 27. 27? All right, we get to finish off with Stan. Oh, and that's an excellent question. Stan asks, do you kill the orc women and children? Why? I was going to give some glib answer. Say, oh, of course you do. But I realized, it depends on the character I play. I would think... Most characters I play, the current one I'm playing right now, Dothan, no, we wouldn't, no. Because to me, and in most of the games I run, and in most of the characters I play, evil is not as black and white as it sometimes is in these stories, and certainly, first off, I would kill the orc women, because they're probably armed and trying to kill me, alright? But the orc children? Boy, that is a tough one. I mean, what do you do? Do you take half of an orc tribe prisoner? What do you do with 17 orcs in chains? That's the problem with D&D. What authority are you going to go turn them over to? Where do you take them? Who's got a prison for all the random half a goblin tribes that get hauled in by do-gooders who can't bring themselves to put them to death? I don't know. I mean, more than likely, I do what I need to do, and if they're not going to bother me, then I leave them alone and I walk away. And does that mean that, some of those orc children are going to grow up to be my future arch enemies? Yeah, that happens. It's the price you pay. But in general, no, I would not slaughter the rest of the tribe if I didn't have to. I mean, you go in there and you battle the warriors and you take them out, and whoever's, sick, elderly, infirm, children, whoever they haven't killed off themselves, let them live. What do I care? All right, time for me to walk away. So, that's a tough question, though, because it's really hard to apply modern-day morals and ethics to a modified medieval fantasy story like that. So, hard to say. But, in general, no. If they're not trying to kill me, I'll let them go.